Now, we read that Donegal has two high-powered motorcycles accessible to Gardaí for routine patrols and to attend high-profile events such as ministerial visits and events like the Donegal Motor Rally. But 75% of that time, the bikes are sitting idle because of a lack of training for local Gardaí. Garda Sergeant Jim Collins is Assistant Secretary of the Donegal Branch of the Association of Sergeants and Inspectors and joins us to give us more details. Good morning, Jim. Thanks very much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you.
Right, OK. And it is as outlined, is it? It's simply these bikes aren't being used to the full potential because of a lack of training. I take it Gardaí want to and are willing to use them, but aren't being trained to allow them to do so. Is it as simple as that?
That pretty much is, Greg, unfortunately. In Donegal, as you quite rightly say, we have two motorcycles, and at present we have two motorcyclists trained. So in a situation where we have four units covering 24-hour two units cover 24 hours, four units on and off completely. So as such, at any time, we're only able to deploy a quarter of our resources. And at a time when resources are at a premium, you know, the utilization of all resources is a very important thing. Whilst I was putting forward the motion at the conference in Galway, we had great support from our colleagues in the Garda College, who are the motorcycle school as such, and they were able to inform us that there has been no form of training, either at a standard level or an advanced level, since 2018. So, I mean, that in itself tells you the story of the deficit. And obviously, as I'm sure you're aware, and most of the people will be aware, the number of people coming to retire in the Gardaí is increasing. So we're losing a lot of people who are qualified motorcyclists. So they're retiring, there's nobody to replace them. So hence, there's a great deficit, you know.
And we have these two, and for annual leave, sick leave, whatever it might be, you know, you can see how there could be gaps there. Is this part of the same problem in terms of the conversation we've had in the past whereby there are Gardaí driving patrol cars that can't use the blue lights and sirens? They aren't trained to the level to be able to for them to pursue a suspect, for an example. Is this part of the same training problem, or is it kind of the same but separate for the bike lads and lassies, if you know what I mean?
It's similar, but it's of a different nature insofar as someone who has qualified, who has a full license, can get what's called a CBD1. So basically, one of the instructors will come up, they'll take them to a very basic training course to say, look, you're capable of driving a patrol car, but you're not entitled to use blue lights, you're not entitled to pursue, et cetera, et cetera. But with motorcyclists, you have to be brought in from day one. You know, you may have an advanced biker in your own private life, but until such time as you've done a standard motorcycle course, you cannot be deployed as a Garda motorcyclist. You know, and that's regardless of people how qualified or how capable or competent they are as a biker in their ordinary life, you know. So that's where, I mean, you know, you can fill gaps in patrol cars, although it mightn't be really appropriate. But, you know, to be a motorcyclist, you have to be trained. And that's a course that lasts, the standard course is 4 weeks long, you know.
So in an ideal world, this is a motion raised at a high-profile event. The higher-ups would say, oh, my word, you know, this is embarrassing. We'll get on this straight away and throw some resources at this. Is that how it played out?
Well, as I say, we had great backing from the Garda College branch, who, as I say, are responsible for most of the training. Now, there is a driving school. The issue, as I say, and when we're able to say that there's been no training, either standard or advanced motorcycle training, since 2018. Now, obviously, we are cognizant of the fact of COVID, etc., which did have a serious impact on training throughout the Gardaí, and obviously throughout greater life as well. COVID had its implications, but, you know, I think it's something we must start to reconsider because, I mean, for example, the need for assistance with traffic management from the Gardaí is becoming more and more important. You know, for example, I mean, soon you'll have the Letterkenny 10K. There's a number of tractor runs. There's 5Ks throughout different areas of the county and throughout the country, obviously. Things like the Donegal Rally, where, you know, motorbikes are essential, for example, for maintaining emergency lanes, etc., to get other emergency vehicles to and from their locations if need be. Motorcycles is the most efficient and effective way. You know, you have the agility, get through traffic, get through people, and it clears the way. And for example, during the rally, we have to import bikes and import motorcyclists to be able to complete the duties, you know.
I get you. Okay. Well, hopefully there is some progress made in the not-too-distant future. We want these bikes out in the streets, obviously, and Gardaí too, do too. But for now, Garda Sergeant Jim Collins, thanks for your time.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you.
Take care. Sergeant Collins is Assistant Secretary of the Donegal branch of the Association of Sergeants and Inspectors. Right, just a quick update on our draw. We are going to be making that draw very, very shortly. The Trombola is ready. We're ready. Are you ready? You have about 21 minutes now to buy your tickets. You could be winning €15,000 before 12 o'clock. Get them now if you wish. Highlandradio.com or give us a ring at 07491 25000. You have time not to miss out. It is completely up to you. But we're waiting to take your calls and to get everyone into that draw drum. Quick break, then we're going to be chatting to Mary T. Sweeney, who's an AIM2 rep. We're going to get an update on a conversation we had last year, I think it was, in relation to the safety of the Old Town Bridge in Letterkenny.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Mary T. Sweeney, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
Before we talk of the updates, remind those who were listening or may not have heard the concerns as it relates to the Old Town Bridge. That's down really, you know, at the bottom of the Letterkenny, over into Old Town, close to where the old Dunn Stores is for those from outside the area. There was concerns about its structural stability, I think.
We have multiple people have raised concerns with me and myself looking at it. There's serious cracking and there's capping stones that have been missing off the top, and several recently, more recently as well, the cracking has become more extensive through the bridge. Now, to me, it appears structurally it is beyond just needing pointed. So I've highlighted, and a group of people came together over a year, maybe perhaps nearly 2 years ago we first identified this. And over the years, there has been work done, but it must be nearly 5 years ago, at least, since there was any significant work done. But it's become in a really, really concerning state, and it's escalating.
There's a number of elements to this, to this too, of course, in terms of the river maintenance, because obviously if silt and other things build up, that puts more pressure, let's just say it like that, on the eyes of the bridge. But also there's the integrity of the bridge itself in terms of safety, but also presumably as well its historical value, Mary T.
Completely. And most people don't realise that the only route, the first route you met coming from Dublin, the Leck Road was actually the main Dublin road coming into Letterkenny. And, you know, the first crossing point, the first narrow point of the river to cross to get into North Donegal was at the Old Town Bridge, which is where the flight of the Earls and all the historical significance went across the river there at that point. And I have written to the Office of Public Works to ask them to consider, I just hear the heritage funding being allocated this morning, but it would be fabulous to hear that by next year that that heritage funding will encompass, and I have talked to people in the Heritage Office in the Office of Public Works to ask them to negotiate to try and get funding for the Old Town Bridge because of its significant historical. There were 57 women and children thrown over during the penal days. You know, there's an awful lot of history surrounding the bridge, and it was the main road and route into Letterkenny.
Yeah, but you see, know, this is what we don't want to lose track of too. When people come to visit our area, it's the places of historical importance that they will that they'll look out. You know, we've got fantastic businesses, don't get me wrong, but a lot of them are multinationals, so you can see them everywhere. But you can't see the Old Town Bridge and you can't learn of its devastating history at times and its importance. That's what tourists want to come and see as well. Now, it's one of those things, isn't it, that falls between a number of stools, multiple areas of responsibility. You've had contact from the Office of Public Works, though. What have they said to you?
Well, what they're saying now is they're actually giving me definitive, you know, clarity about who's responsible for what. So they're saying the responsibility of the structural integrity and maintenance of the bridge superstructure lies with the local authority, Donegal County Council, in this case. Now, I have also written to them with the same information. Myself and members of the public formed a committee, a general cross-party committee, and we had a presentation in the Station House Hotel. As I say, it must be over 2 years ago at this stage. And as a result, the councillors accommodated us to do a presentation for Donegal County Council in the offices. and it seemed to be or appeared to be received very well, discussing the history, the importance of the bridge and the concerns about it. But I find it sad to think that nobody has picked up on this, either most importantly from the structural point, but also from the historical and heritage point for the community. We have some excellent sculptors and arts and crafts people in the community that at least a sculpture could be constructed there to remember those that died there, to the significance of the fight of the Earl, to extend it, you know, to show it was the main route into Letterkenny. And there's loads of things could be done from a cultural and historical and tourism point of view. But the first thing must happen is the bridge must be made safe.
Right, so the OPW are going to do some dredging work. It seems their responsibility is the river then. So that hopefully could prevent flooding that could do further damage or stuff backing up in the ice and things like that there. Hopefully that might contribute. But in terms of the stability of the structure, repairing it, retaining what's there, the ball's now in the council's court. Is that a fair enough assessment of
totally,
where we're at?
Yeah, totally in the council's court now. And again, in relation to the council engineers, I have written to the council engineers, the traffic, the engineer in charge of the roads and transport, the culture. So I'm hoping that between them, somebody will pick up on this now. And in advance of the Office of Public Works doing the dredging of the river, if there was immediate plans for a path, even along a short stretch of the river under the Iron Bridge, where the old trains crossed on the Iron Bridge, which is adjacent to it, maybe this would be a great opportunity to work hand in hand with the Office of Public Works and give access down onto the river there in a safe manner, because we've had several, you know, incidents there where people have had to go into the river to help people get out than that, if you know what I mean.
I do.
So maybe this is the time to look at that at the same time and try and, you know, make it an easier access for people using the life rings, not to get people out of there ever is that occasion.
Mm-hmm. All right, listen, thanks for the update, Mary T. Sweeney. We'll keep an eye on it with you, of course. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Have a good day.
For that, okay?
All right, no problem. Take care of yourself. 086 60 25,000. A caller says, Peter McVerry's apology over his claim that the Taoiseach overruled Minister of Housing on eviction ban takes away from the real issue of homelessness. Is this forced apology stemming from the media circus which journalists created? What happened there? I don't know if that's really what happened. Father McVerry had a source who gave him this information, and he said it publicly. Now, the Taoiseach had an opportunity to say that that's simply not the case, and he did say that. Now, what you had then, too, was some politicians having a go at Peter McVerry, who everyone's entitled to a mistake. But that being said, Peter McVerry has apologised to draw a line under it. I'm not sure he's went back to his original source of that information. I think he himself saw that maybe it was distracting from the wider issue and issued that apology to draw a line under it. I still think, given what he's achieved, what he does, what he's doing, he should be somewhat beyond reproach. And if people disagree with him, they do so respectfully. I don't think that happened. I don't think it weakens his position in any way, shape or form. I believe he's apologised to draw a line under it. But he was told that information from a source. And my understanding is he didn't go back to that source to double check. He just wanted to apologise and get it out of the way. You know, no one's beyond reproach. No politician should be beyond being called out. Some don't like it and run away, never to be heard from again. But others also stand up and represent their people. Peter McVerry himself, as I say, he owes the country nothing. And it maybe ended up being a storm in a teacup. It depends. I don't know. Right. Okay, let's go to Kevin now. Hi, Kevin.
How you doing, Greg? Good morning.
I'm doing good. Hey. Good to have you on the show. What do you want to talk about?
This sort of came out of your broadcast recently about the terrible tragedy off Malin Head and people being lost.
Yeah.
There's things I have to say. I've waited for years to say this, but I think the public should know and it should be helpful. There's people that wear airtight life jackets who go into boats, and even small boats and big boats. They clip them flat. They're supposed to blow up if you go into the water, and they're supposed to blow up automatically. I know two cases where people did go into the water, could have lost their lives, only somebody saw them in time, right? And the airtight life jacket did not inflate.
Wow. So it was an anchor more than a flotation device then at that point.
Sorry, say it again.
It was more of a hindrance than a flotation device then. It was weighted around their neck, but it around their chest, but it did not inflate.
It did not inflate. That is correct. It happened down at the Bay Area, just to the north of Carcarory Pier, outside Mull. Guy was actually a few years ago. He was a year or two older than me. It also happened in Loch Swilly. And somebody from what happened is they were going from what's called the keel boat. People call them yachts, the large boats with the keels on them, and into the small inflatable. And they were climbing down into it. The small inflatable moved, and they fell in.
Mm.
And the reason is quite simple, and a lot of people do this, is they fold these things up, or maybe they buy them along with the boat, the second-hand boat or something like that. They never get them serviced. Supposed to be serviced a year. There's a sensor in it and a capsule that's supposed to set off automatically.
And they have a lifespan, don't they, effectively, Kevin? I mean, they do have to be maintained. You can't just leave it there for 5-6 years and expect it to work just when you need it. It's kind of dangerous, really, because it can give people a false sense of security.
Totally false, because people can fold them up, throw them into the boot of the car, throw them into what's called the heads, that's up at the front of a boat or something, one of the keel boats, or even get along with the boat when they buy it second-hand, they assume it's okay. My recommendation for people, actually, I wouldn't wear one. And I have a background in water sport. I qualified in 83 as a senior Royal Yacht Association instructor, sailing and racing, and also a Norway sports boat instructor, which meant handling ribs, sailing boats for clubs, things like that. So I have a background. We've used bounce aids. Some people use the foam sort of type life jacket and things like that, you know. I would recommend people to wear a bounce aid or a life jacket. Now, it's compulsory in this day and age, I think, in the Republic for the people going fishing commercially. Do you wear a life jacket? But it all depends what type. I've heard the excuse used in the past, particularly fishermen, that these life jacket type things got in their way of work. Well, if you're in the back of a 14-foot racing dinghy and you're crouched down underneath the boom and you're wearing a bounce aid, it doesn't get in our way at all.
Right, okay. You also have concerns about signage as well. So you would favour a different type of life jacket buoyancy aid than the ones you trigger the inflation of. You also have concerns about
there's
signage.
Ones that I used
go ahead, Kevin.
Way back. There was ones that we used as fitted people out with for training both young and adult in the past, way back, say, about 1980, and it was called Utter Sport. Two areas of foam in it, up near the chest, the collar, right? And then another one where if he bent forward, because there was two different areas, two bits of foam inside not connected, you could move forward, you could bend, you could do anything.
Yeah.
But it was also an air one that you could put the air in yourself if you needed to, but there was nothing in it. It was called Otter Sport, and it was, remember, the designation for it was BS3595.
Mm-hmm.
That's British standard, not approved, but approved by the RYA, the Royal Yacht Association. I would wear one of those if I was I would probably wear a bounce aid. I've got to point out a very, very important difference. The bounce aid, if you go into the water, does not turn you around, flip your face up if you're unconscious. But what's called a life jacket, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between the two. The handy thing about the buoyancy aid, too, is it protects the ribs a bit, maybe protects the spine, the back, if you slipped or fell. So you have that sort of wee bit of protection. But I definitely wouldn't wear an air-type life jacket.
Look, yeah, but I think with the buoyancy aid, too, what they do is they help you. You know, a lot of people hit the water. I don't often sometimes realize how cold it is, but it assists you and helps. I think it can help calm the panic to allow you to make your way back to your vessel or to tread the water or whatever might be required until such time as help comes.
You said something quite interesting. You sparked off someone else. People don't appreciate the panic when people go into the water. I'll give you an example. I've saved the lives of two people from drowning, one at 3 years old, little female, and a fellow at 15 years old. I got them by the hair. The 15-year-old was half drowned. I'll concentrate on the 15-year-old because the 3-year-old is not terribly far away from where I live, so I won't go into it in detail. It was years ago. The other one was just outside the marina in Fuengirola, south of Malaga in southern Spain. He went out in a day on the beach when the red flags were up, the Mediterranean had blown up. There was a Frenchman with an international 47, named the class dinghy. I'd already sailed with him in the day or two before it, and there was a Spanish fellow there wanting to go out for a sail as well. The Frenchman said to me, they've said to us, meaning the people in the local sailing club within the marina, don't go out today. Well, it suited me, that type of weather, and the waves that there were really suited me well. If I hadn't went out that day in the boat, the 15-year-old would have drowned. It's only an act of God that I went out. I said, no, we're going ahead. And for those type of conditions, it was grist to the mill for me, okay? So I was on the helm, three of us went out, bit of a crowd, an international, 470, which is about 14 foot long. That's 4.7 metres. No, it's approximately that it is. And I saw thousands of people on the beach going bananas. There was no swimmers in the water, couldn't understand it, but a heavy look. Then, as the direction we went in, I saw the dark hair in the water. The only thing you see in the water is a head. Very difficult to see in waves. So I sailed towards them. Actually, I sailed that fast, went past them a bit. And you can sail a dinghy backward. People don't believe that. What you do is you push the mainsail out to the other side, reverse the rudder towards you, and she back right into him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I used the international language with the Spaniard because he didn't speak English. Frenchman spoke English and Spanish, and I didn't speak any Spanish in those days, right? The Spaniard was going to take off the buoyancy and give it him, but in case we capsized over him, I actually got the Spaniard physically. He was wearing a buoyancy, so he was safe enough, and he was a swimmer, right? And I put the Spaniard in beside him, beside the young Spanish boy, a young Spanish adult sailing with us, you see? So trying to get a body, the fellow was that emaciated, and the strength had gone. Yeah, he's glazed, and I'm nearly vomiting water. It was a bit of a job to get him in, because you're talking about a smooth body that's wet.
And he was him dead up, and weight he couldn't too, help I'm himself. Sure.
We got him into the marina, and the civil guard appeared and took him away. So if I hadn't gone out, then Dave was a goner. Now, he was half-drowned. That leads me on to another thing as well, to say, as it was called a secondary drowning. And I think it was an RWA information I got years ago, too. There was a man in England who had sort of what I call half-drowned, brought down by somebody, stood in a slipway, told people he was all right, and apparently looked half all right.
Yes.
Even though he got a lot of water in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And he went home. By midnight, he was dead.
Wow.
What happened is he ingested salt water into the lungs, some, and into the stomach.
Okay.
The salt got into the bloodstream, poisoned the bloodstream. So if anybody has taken from the water, what I consider having consumed water with the stomach or the lungs, well, people wouldn't know, okay? Whether it's a child or an adult, my recommendation is straight to hospital.
Okay. Well, listen, Kevin, unfortunately, time is against us. You may well have saved a life in that conversation. We appreciate your time. We're heading into the long weekend. We're heading into better weather, I hope, and we're going to be back out enjoying the water. And we want to make sure that people, as many people die in inland water and open waters, die in car crashes more, in fact, as well. So we need to be really careful. Right. Kevin, thank you very much indeed for your time. I really appreciate that. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Thanks to Vinny and Eileen for sending in a nice Easter card. It's very much appreciated. I just want to recognise that. We're in studio now with David James, country music sensation. Things are going from strength to strength for you, David. Is that how it feels? Because you're at the coalface, it's your life.
While it does seem, on the surface, things are going well, it's always a work in progress, but very happy with how things have been going recently, especially since the comeback after COVID, and really starting to get back into the swing of things now, and things are starting to move.
Yeah, because I've spoke to other artists in the past, and they were going great guns before COVID. You know, when it's a momentum game, really, isn't it?
It is, it is.
And then it stopped for some. So you're have got yourself into the position whereby that upward curve continues.
Yeah, and listen, you hate to sort of bring the COVID thing up again, but now looking forward, as you say, it's all about momentum, and heading into the summer, we've got an extremely busy schedule. And now there's a balance because we've got recordings coming out along with the gigs again, so it's lovely, and we've got a full album coming now on the 12th of May as well.
Excellent. We're going to talk about that in a moment, but what we'll do is we'll listen to your new single. It's called The Promise. And some great people behind it. You're, of course, at the front, but who wrote this for you?
So the song was written by Darren Holden, who is a member of the High Kings, incredibly successful band, and also by Mark Roberts, who represented Ireland in the Eurovision, but he's also wrote a lot of great songs, and a presenter on Galway Bay FM as well. So the two lads are incredibly talented, great songwriters, and it was really, really nice of them to give me this song. And for them to approve of my version, you know, I changed it slightly from what they sent me. It was great, so.
All right, and it's called The Promise. We'll hear it now, then we'll chat more. You have to dedicate it to who I'm told is your biggest fan, Kiva. So if you could look into that camera and dedicate The Promise to Kiva.
Hi, Kiva. Hope you're keeping good.
All right, listen. This is The Promise. It's David James' new track. We're going to talk about what's coming up for David. Some exciting news in terms of a record contract and a busy couple of months ahead. But let's take this track now. It is called The Promise.
Listen to the sound of the ocean as it carries your dreams to the shore. Gone like the snows of last winter, lost like the promise of yore. Where the land of desire made plenty, where your fortune was there to behold. And the dark distant days of our childhood, a story that's no longer told. We were guided by God as our anchor, but the devil, he led us astray. Every last dollar we bled for, the loneliness took it away. Determined we struggled together, blinded by the lights of Times Square. But the sod and the smell of the heather lingered in hearts of despair. With the excitement he could hardly contain. Dead on his feet from the journey, dying to be part of the game. Laden with tales of the Glenties, I couldn't but help shed a tear. For if God saved a prayer for old Ireland, would anyone choose to be in a land where we feel so alone, and the deafening cry of regret is calling me home. And if ever the promise I made I can finally fulfill, I will rest in the land of my father, Glencullen.
Right, that is David James there and The Promise. David's still with us. When you're picking a song, David, you know, because that's modern, but it's a bit traditional there as well, and you have to play to your audience, but you've got fans from, you know, 4 to 104 and you know, maybe either side of it. It's a tough one, is it, to pick a song? Because you have to put a lot into it. You want to make sure you make the right choice.
It is tough, but you're never going to be able to predict how a song is going to go down either, because you could go into a studio and have a song and you would think this song is going to set the world alight, and you might release it and never hear tell of it again. It's just so unpredictable. And then you would have a song that maybe you think, that's not going to do that well, and you put it out there and it gets a great reaction. But, you know, I guess the first thing that I look for whenever I'm picking a song to record is something that I enjoy singing. And The Promise, the first time I heard it, I knew that I was really going to enjoy singing it and performing it. And then it has a lovely connection with Donegal there as well, and Glen Columbkill. And we filmed a video actually down in Glen Columbkill.
Lovely job, actually. I saw that, yeah.
I just want to say to the people down there, from the Sleeve League boat tours, to everyone in Glen Columbkill down at the museum, they were just so appreciative. And everyone in the pub as well, the little pub scene, everyone looked after us so well. Lovely people, and such a gem on our doorstep too.
Yeah, indeed. I was standing there last week myself, coincidentally, not making a video or anything exciting. I just accidentally drove past the turn off to Sleeve League. and that's actually a true story. But it was great to get down to Glen Columbkill as well. So in our... I mean, obviously, you've got fans all over the place, but we're a small country, right? So how do you judge success here? So if The Promise does really well, is it about sort of getting more people to come to your concerts and the trips or whatever it might be? Is it downloads? Is it plays on Spotify and YouTube? Like, how do you gauge success in 2023? I wonder, not you, but the artists in general.
Yeah, you see, when you say that, success is measured by the artist, you know. I mean, whenever I started out 10 years ago, success for me would have been genuinely to perform at a Highland Radio concert.
I get you,
but then you do that and then your measure of success changes. So for me, I guess this album that I'm releasing now on the 12th of May, if that album would do well and maybe propel my career another step in the right direction, that would be success to me.
Yeah, so it's an onward journey of progression rather than reaching a destination of success, so to speak.
For sure. And like, whenever you release a single like The Promise that has been released, and now we're starting to see some reaction from media outlets. We're going to be doing Ireland AM next week. I'm on the Nigel Noon Show today. You know, all these type of things, once they start to come in, you think, right, this has been successful.
Yeah, I get you.
You know?
And you recently signed a contract, did you?
I did. Well, I signed this record deal last year. So I did the duet with Daniel, Don't Take the Good Times for Granted, which was written by Shuni Cramsey from Kildaff. And Daniel's record label, Demon Records, they released the song for us. And whenever that had the success that it did at that time, they started to get into talks with me, and they asked me would I send them a few songs that I had recorded, and actually The Promise was one of them. So they really liked the songs that I had sent to them, and I sat down with them. They're based in London, they're based in BBC Studios. So I sat down with them, had a talk, and they offered me a record deal. So I guess it was off the back of the duet with Daniel that this all came about. And to be signed to the same label as him, and you look at the success he's had, it's great. I'm really, really thankful for the opportunity.
And listen, it's a brilliant thing to be able to say in and of itself. But how does this deal assist you? Is it they help with the production and the release and the promotion and stuff? Or what was a record deal in this
so
day and age?
They're going to look after the promotion of the album whenever it's coming out, doing PR. And now they're UK-based, obviously, because they're BBC. So the hope would be that maybe we might get some traction over in the UK, because as you mentioned, Ireland is a small pond, and it's nice to do some work outside of home as well. And then they'll also handle the distribution of getting the album into the shops and looking after your recordings and streaming, and even down to the social media side of things, they look after that too. Yeah, so it's brilliant.
Excellent. Which allows you to do focus your attentions on other stuff. Have you the track selected now for the new album, which is out on May 12th? So it's only really around the corner. So I presume that's all
so
done.
The album is all signed and sealed, and it's in production at the minute. So it's a 12-track album. The Promise is going to be on there. Don't Take the Good Times for Granted. Killarney and My Dreams. And then we've done some other nice songs. We've done a version of Far Away in Australia, which is a really, really nice song. And I guess it's sort of relatable for me at the minute, because a lot of my peers, a lot of people my age are making that move to Australia. So it's a nice... When I was recording the song, it did feel quite personal. And I just hope people are going to like the finished product. You know, you put so much time and effort into this thing, and then it's really at the hands of the public to decide if they like it or not, and yeah. whether or not it's been a success. So I just really hope that people are going to like it.
And what's the live scene like now in Ireland at the moment, David? Now, I know you do gigs elsewhere, but it yeah. bounced back well, didn't it?
It did.
Is it the country scene? Is that how you spread all the live music scene?
Yeah.
Because some of your gigs... You know, you're obviously a big country act, right? But I've seen you perform, and you can go right across the genres. You know what I mean? And you're excellent at getting the crowd involved in all of it. But I mean, obviously, dependent on where you're playing, you'll hone the gig for that. But yeah, the scene's good there.
The live scene is good, and you know, it did come back really strong after COVID. And then there was a few worrying months where people were thinking, "Oh no,
the bubble burst again."
But now it really has started to tick off again. Like this Saturday night, we're in O'Flaherty's in Buncrana. It's called OTB. So it's OTB Goes Country, and that's sold out. And then Sunday night, we're going to be in Belmullet in County Mayo. But no, we're really starting to see great crowds at the gigs again, which is, it's more a sigh of relief than anything. Mm. You know, it's great to see, but it's just such a sigh of relief. And for us as performers, when we're on there and we have a great crowd, it just lifts you so much more than maybe a bad night. But yeah, I think everyone still has bad nights.
And it is a very supportive scene. Not necessarily, I'm not part of it, but I'm part of it in the context of this interview. But I mean, I think you had Lisa McEwen here not so long ago.
Yep.
Then you had, and then you're on this show, and I was interviewing Daniel O'Donnell, and he always has a mention for you and sees you as sort of the future of the scene. How important, I think sometimes we still, to some extent, take Daniel for granted in what he's achieved, who he is, and his global recognition, because he's so accessible, I think. How important is it, someone like you, to have that kind of an endorsement from someone like him?
You know, it's huge. I think you said people take him for granted here. People don't realise in Ireland how much of a megastar he is around the world. Like, there's times I'd be talking to him and he's playing in Canada, but he's playing to a 5,000-seater over there. Like, and then he goes to Branson, Missouri, 2,500 people every single day for 3 weeks. Like, the man is just such a huge star. And as you say, he is very accessible. And I think that's one of the most likable things about him. You know, he came to the concert last Tuesday to do that for Highland Radio, to do that for us as a station. And, you know, it was of no real benefit to him in the same sense that it wasn't of any benefit to his career to record with me, but he still did it. And I just hope that if I ever am lucky enough to have a quarter of the success that he's had, that I'll be able to do the same for other exactly. people, you know.
And I wanted to dedicate that interview to two things: A, plugging you, and B, remembering the memory of paying tribute to the memory of Peel McCann as well. That's just the type of him. It wasn't about him.
Never.
But you have to drag him away from sort of the but this interview today is about you, and well done on The Promise. Check out the video, by the way. Search The Promise, David James. It's really put together. It's a great advertisement, actually, for our beautiful county, and Glencolumbkill is a beautiful part of the world. All down there is. So it's out now. It's getting great traction. David's appearing on the TV soon as well. His album's coming out on May 12th, a 12-track album, and a derivative of the BBC is releasing that. He's signed to that label now. What's the name of the label again? Sorry, it's
just Demon Records.
Demon Records. Okay, they handle Daniel as well, don't they?
They do, yeah.
All right, and then you've mentioned where you're playing in the region in the not-too-distant future as well. Busy summer, is it?
Really busy summer, and even it doesn't stop to the summer. We don't really get a break now until the start of November because...
Yeah, but I'm so old, you see, I don't look that far ahead. It's different for you. You can plan for 2024 and 2025.
Yeah, we've got a great run of festivals over the summer, great run of gigs, and then into the winter we're going back to do my Galway trip again this year in October. Lots of exciting things.
Yeah, and you can check out David James social media for information on the trip and all the other things that is going on. Listen, continued success onwards and upwards, David. It's great to see things going so well for you. And who's to say the sky is the limit where it's going to go next? But
thanks,
that's an
Greg.
Exciting journey for you, isn't it?
Definitely is. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so check out David James there on your streaming platforms to hear The Promise. You can go onto YouTube too and watch that video, search it out there. And as I say, if you want more details on his gigs and trips and what have you, David James, his social media page, Facebook page, all the details there. We're going to give away 15 grand in about 5 minutes. We've retained the services of David James for our big, big draw because we're about to give away a prize worth €15,000 ahead of sales. Sean Quinn has slithered into the joke.
I was 3 foot tall yesterday, now I slithered.
No, No, you took that from that. It was the camera angle. I never even had a joke about it. I wouldn't do that. But we are here now. It's the culmination of about a month, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's just over the month. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and we're about to give away €15,000 in value, €10,000 holiday voucher, €5,000 cash spending money.
Yep.
We've talked about what we do. David, have you anything on your bucket list of place that you'd want to go?
I would love to go to Vegas. Now, I'm lucky enough to be going to Nashville this May. I'm taking my brother for his 30th. But Vegas is on the bucket list, and also Dubai. And I guess with 10 grand, you could do both. Couldn't you?
Oh, comfortably. Yeah, comfortably. Yeah,
I'd love to do
a couple of times. Yeah, Las Vegas sounds cool. Dubai, love it. I was over there. Brilliant.
Never been to Dubai.
Haven't you? Are the numbers facing you? Because you sound a bit quiet there. Are the numbers on that mic facing you? B1?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's it. You could do it. Someone's going to do it. So shall we get the draw done now and then we can talk a bit more?
Cool.
Right. So David James is going to do that draw for us now.
During the break, I give this a heap of birds.
Yep, okay. So, as he says, and I watched it, he's rotated it, and he's going to dig deep, and the hand's going in, and one of you now is about to win 15 grand. What is the winning ticket number?
0808.
Yeah, that's 100%. I can verify that. It's definitely 0808. 08.
Is there an 8080?
No.
Thank God. David, come on, sit down with the ticket.
I had one job.
That's the pressure to draw.
The ticket, say what number it was. I couldn't even do it.
Yeah, no, it's all right. As long as there isn't a 08.
100%.
Or 8080 ticket. Okay, so 0808. Someone out there has just won 15 grand in value. Talk to us about the structure of this and who we worked with to put this together, Sean.
Yeah, so for the second year running, we worked with Atlantic Travel, who are based in Letterkenny, and they're fantastic to work with. And it's actually a huge benefit for the winner, because they can work off the experience that Atlantic Travel have in the industry, and especially if you want to go and have 4 or 5 holidays out of this. And I know last year's winner, they had they were delighted with the service that they were given. So it's great to have them on board.
And what was kind of interesting too, when we did the early draw for a cruise, the fellow that won it had been on a cruise with Atlantic Travel before. It's just because we're such a small community, and that's why people have a good chance of winning. What a coincidence that was. So he'd booked a cruise with Atlantic Travel and was going back in now to book a cruise with Atlantic Travel with €1,000 winning.
Yeah, the day he actually came and collected his check, he was going down to Atlantic that day to look at the dates.
He wasn't in a hurry.
Cruises are such a good experience as well.
Have you done one socially? But there's a bit of a mix when you gig on one, isn't
there? Yeah,
there
is.
There's a lot of downtime.
I've never done one socially, but as you say, like, we might go out there for a week and maybe do 2 gigs. We're actually...
I never understand. How do you get that? And how does it make money? You get paid and you
get gigs.
Yeah,
it's fantastic, really. I'm lucky enough to be bringing my mum and dad this year. We're going to Alaska at the very end of May, end of June.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Okay, stay right where you are. Right, okay, let's go to line one here, because I want to say a quick hello to Michael and Mary. Nellis or Nellis? Is it Mary, is it?
Nellis, Mary T. Nellis, yeah.
Mary T. Nellis. How are you getting on?
Oh, I'm great. I think I'm all the better for hearing you.
Yes, okay, it's been nice to speak to you. What do you think I'm going to say to you, Mary?
Oh, well, I was actually driving there earlier and I heard about the draw being on, and I was just thinking, God, wouldn't it be great to win it?
You didn't buy the ticket today, did you?
No, I didn't. I bought it a while back.
Oh, right. Okay. I was going to say that. What a story that would be. You've won. Let's get straight to it. You've won €10,000 of a voucher, a holiday voucher, and €5,000 in cash.
€10,000 voucher. Holiday. Oh, I'm letting all the staff know and boys here.
And €5,000 in cash. Are you going to tell them about that?
Oh, and €5,000 in cash.
Am I right, John? I don't like the way you're looking about that.
No, 100%
correct. We'll have loads of celebrations today. Thanks a million.
I'm just, what is it, Mary?
Delighted with that.
Mary Nellis, yeah.
Mary T. Nellis is my name. I'm known as Mary T.
I think Mary T is celebrating 30 years in Foy's as well.
Are you Mary?
That's right, yes, I am indeed. Well, I was actually 27 in Foy's and 10 in Decker 18 before that, so... 37 years done.
Right, so you've got a €10,000 voucher now. Any ideas That's what brilliant. You might do with it? One big blowout or multiple holidays? Where are you going to take himself?
No, I think I would like multiple holidays Same. Now. I think I would like that,
That's
maybe.
That's what I would do.
Need some time now to think about it.
Well, the staff...
I'm in bad need of a holiday now after all those years' service.
Come here, put the violin away, Mary T, will you? Come here, you have now the staff... You've the staff at Atlantic Travel to work with. They'll look after you.
That's great. I'm delighted. Thanks a million for that. Thanks a lot.
€5,000 in cash as well, too. Let's not forget about that.
And cash as well. Brilliant. Thanks a million.
Congratulations, Mary T.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Fair play to
great.
You.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's Mary T. Anita's there. She's working out in Foy's, is it? She's 27, 30 years there, depending on whether you listen to her or Sean. Her and Michael's name was on the ticket, I believe. They are the winners. Congratulations, Mary T. She's clearly delighted. Why wouldn't
brilliant.
You be?
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
And it's kind of you're responsible for it, David. That's positive spin now. You know
I'm telling
I mean?
You.
You literally gave it away. Forget anybody else.
I wonder, does she know that the €5,000 is paid in €1 a week installments?
Would you please do me a favour and not give Sean Quinn any ideas?
And she has to pay for the postage.
All right, so she's down 10 cents a week.
Yeah.
No, she's not,
it's
of
good,
course.
It's a good prize, though.
Mary T. Neelis, congratulations. You have won a €10,000 holiday voucher, €5,000 in cash. And we wish you and your partner, Michael, all the health and happiness to enjoy that. And I have a feeling Mary T is going to enjoy it and has put in a good slog working as well in her adult life and deserves it. Thank you, everyone who entered. Sean, you'll echo that, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a huge success again. Thanks to everybody internally for all the work that's been put in. As I said, there's a lot of work goes into this. It just doesn't happen. So thanks to my team. Thanks to you guys from a presenting point of view, because you've kept the word out there. And thanks to all our listeners for contributing and supporting us, because, and thanks to the winners. And we look forward to the next one.
Yeah, all right, okay. That's it, I think. Yep, well done. Mary T. Neelis, love it. I love it when they are happy with it. David, James, thank you very much again for
Thanks,
hanging
Greg.
About to do that. You're on this afternoon, are you?
Yeah, chat to you at 2:30.
All right, okay. And Sean, I don't know when I'll speak to you next, but I presume it'll be when you're plugging something.
Probably.
Okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Before you go, we should mention one more day of voting in the Customer Services Award. So you might just quickly run through that.
Kind of last chance saloon for you. If you haven't done it, highlandradio.com, click on the link. It's a pretty easy process. So 6 categories, but it will close tomorrow evening. That's it. When it's done, it's done.
Yeah, okay. And then there's going to be a big event in May. There's 52 categories there. 8, is it, overarching categories?
Six in total.
So you'll find the type of service business that you want to recognise for the work that they are doing. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks,
I really do appreciate it. Okay, so that's it. That's where we have to leave it on the programme for today. We have music for you tomorrow as the show's off for it being Good Friday. I'm off next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday for a break with the family. Donald Kavanagh will look after you, though. You're in a very safe pair of hands there, of course. And Caroline Orr, who researches and produces, and Anya on hand as well. So I'll chat to you Monday week. Have a wonderful Easter. Again, thank you for everyone who listened and watched the show and got involved in it. As I say, have a great weekend.